Hello once again, folks, and welcome to the 10th episode of the BCP RPG podcast. This is a mouthful to say, yada yada yada.
We're terribly sorry for the lateness.
Yeah, that, see, we had actually recorded the 9th episode a while back, and we had a kind of special episode for you guys where Tyler guest starred on the episode with us. But then we found out that our recording software can only handle a minute of conference calls unless you fork over money, which me and Hubert are cheap and stuff.
Yeah.
So, yeah. So apologies about that, guys, and also the status updates on the website, and actually I think everything on the website
has gone silent.
Well, everything's... Status updates-wise, I've just been crazy busy. I'm slowly coming back into the swing of things here, and then school starts up in 2 weeks. I don't know what's going to happen because I'm going to high school for the first time, but I'll try and keep up with those. And then Bio's currently having problems accessing the website, so I'm going to be talking to him some more, too.
Oh, hey, Bio got a news update for last week.
He did?
Yeah.
Okay, well, then apparently the problems have resolved.
And why can I hear myself in the background sometimes? It was like before.
It's probably just your mic. Okay. So anyway, on this week's episode, we're going to be... we're going to be dissecting...
EW/NewJam post.
Yeah. And Hubert likes strawberry jam. Anyway. So yeah, we're going to be dissecting that.
Because it's plot, basically. And everyone loves plot. We need plot because it's been a really slow week. And Bio's news update from last week is,
outdated.
Not really.
Well, yeah, since nothing happened.
Yeah, basically nothing happened. But let's just give an overview of what has recently happened before getting onto the analyzation, because then we can get all the unimportant things out of the way. So basically... So
Mark Bearers had a lot of... Well, not a lot, it just... They sort of started picking up again, and then they broke apart because Microsnipe's busy. So he's telling everyone to basically go in their own way, which sounds is so I'm good.
Kokoro was blown up, sort of. And the iOS is just going to save the ransomed people.
W and I are about to restart stuff with the school since he's back. And I'm going to be having a mental battle, or my character is. So that's going to be difficult for me.
This may be a bit old, but Tillian and Emotia finally got married after so many months.
And now Tillian's about to cheat on her or something.
Yeah.
Soap opera down there. Days at Casa Juturna.
Yeah. It seems lives like a soap opera, bro. Soap opera.
Yeah. Tyler and Alex will get the references I just made because of our Skype conversations. And so does Hubert.
Yeah.
And anyway, that's that. The Shadow Hapaka, this new wannabe criminal organization, is what the ILS is going after because they kidnapped, I think, like 11 random NPC Matoran for no real reason.
They're probably just going to be killed in front of
the
ILS.
And there's a lot of random illusion stuff, but I don't know.
Everything's just weird now.
In Liwahi, there's a tavern thing going on. Yeah, is that about it?
Oh yeah, this is maybe also very old, but Tillian is no longer a Mark Bearer.
Yeah, that happened. Nicarag was forced with a mark of lust. She ate it, his blood or something, because Dorian made him her. And,
stuff happened. Yeah. It's been a really, really, really slow week.
Like, for the past 2 weeks.
Yeah.
Salvin, actually, in case anyone cares about him, he had a mental breakthrough for a little bit and then faded away.
Oh, yeah, and the Valkyrie person, Anthryn, has come back.
Yeah, Anthryn is back, and she's heading towards a temple for the Valkyrie for reasons yet unknown, but really, temple...
The plot seems interesting, so follow it if you want.
Yeah, it's bound to make explosions sooner or later.
And I interviewed Vezok's friends a week or two ago, and because it wasn't like released with the 9th episode, I'm gonna release it with this episode. It's probably not gonna be very out of date because nothing like happened.
And yeah, Hubert interviewed VF because when I interviewed him last time, I had a lot of recording issues. And seeing as I make up my questions on the fly, it's difficult for me to make up questions when I know the answers sometimes.
I just rehash questions from my Tyler interview.
Well, yeah. So, yeah.
And it's really short and simple. And the fans love short and simple.
Some fans are suggesting we make this thing like 15 minutes long, which I don't see possible at all.
It would help me a lot, though, because I have to edit so much stuff. I have to make so much SoundCloud and Podomatic accounts, and I'm like the busy guy, and oh, I have all this stress.
Yeah, sorry about that.
Yeah.
But yeah, so for those of you who yell at Hubert for his editing, do realize that he does put a lot of effort into this. He just doesn't have as much time as he'd like to, regardless of popular belief.
Yeah.
So yeah.
It takes me about half an hour to get home from school.
Yeah, so that just goes to show you.
And then I have to, like, sleep, like, earlier than you.
And I'm cranky in the morning because I have to stay up late for him.
So, yeah. So, yeah. Let's just avoid this off-topicness and start analyzing, the post.
Okay, so...
You want me to
read it? Yeah, we're gonna... no, it's kind of long. I don't know if people... That's just gonna take a while.
Good point.
So, yeah, anyway. So we'll start by, like, taking, I guess, paragraph by paragraph. So...
First paragraph, Stannis is walking around.
It's not really that important, so
second
that's...
Second paragraph, he sees him Torrin, who drops
the parish were the important stuff. Okay, so the pebbles. I don't think they just put that in there for no real reason. There's always a reason for why people put these kind of stuff into plot-related things. And now, if we think back to way back when the Rakshi were searching in Liwahi, in that one area, they went and searched in a pile of pebbles. Or
suspicious.
Rocks. So, whatever these are, they're probably related.
To rocks.
Now, if it's the Uber Toa stones, this tells you that they're a lot smaller than the ones we're accustomed to in the canon.
Actually, basically, Toa stones are basically rocks with that you just any random rock you can pick up and put magic into it.
Well, from what I've from the movies, they were big diamond thingies.
It's typical they turn magical.
Yeah, but anyway, so that's one thing. And then another thing is, it's kind of strange how it just sort of broke open the moment he passed by Stannis, the Mystery Matoran's bag of contents, because
totally not suspicious.
Yeah, so, that just shows that there's probably something going on with the rocks. So, also, if we think back to the obelisk and the six slots, perhaps there's certain rocks, like keys, basically, that go in each of those slots and open it up or something. Not into a Death Star like Episode 6 discussed, which we might release soonish once Nuju comes back. There's more order in the RPG.
He popped into the BZPRB news and discussion just recently.
Yeah.
But it's not back. Not back. Yet.
Okay, so now that we've discussed the Mystery Matoran's rocks things, and it's kind of showing, I think there's going to be a pattern later on in the staff plot where rocks are going to play a deal. What type of rocks, we don't know yet. They could be keys, Toa stones.
A large black one stood in the center of many smaller stones. Large black stone.
Is center. That the obelisk? What is that?
In the paragraph it says, a large blackish one stood in the center of many smaller stones, and a cluster of six rocks stood apart of the others. Seemingly satisfied with this setup, the Matoran stood up and dusted the snow off himself.
Oh, yeah. We're getting there, Hubert.
Yeah.
So, yeah, and then third paragraph. So, yeah, Stannis...
asks if the Matoran needs help.
Yeah, that's... basically it right there. Also, the Matoran says he needs to bring the rocks up a hill a ways. We don't know why that is. And second off, first off, he knows his name, which doesn't surprise us because of the Mystery Matoran knowing everyone's names and stuff. But the fact that his bag happened to rip while he was passing by Stannis to bring rocks up the hill and know Stannis' name, those are all stuff. So, yeah. So Stannis, of course, brings up the question about how he knows his name, And the Matoran just says the same way Nuju did, which means that there's obviously some sort of something Nuju knew when he heard about him being the Wanderer and stuff. The mystery Matoran knows as well. And also, the fact that he just says it with a shrug, that's also somewhat strange, because it implies it's somehow intuition or something, which doesn't really happen.
Magic.
Yeah, hand wave. So, yeah.
This will be really revealed in at a further date.
Yeah, and then the Matoran also calls him the Wanderer, so
and
he knows...
mentions the prophecy.
Which, here's the thing I find strange. He knows the prophecy, he knows about the Wanderer, but he doesn't know the words by heart.
Mm-hmm.
That we'll get to in a little bit. Now, here's what Nuju was talking... or Stannis, the Mystery Matoran, was talking about with the large blackish one in the middle of many smaller stones. So,
and
think back
others,
to large blackish...
That's the large blackish one might represent the Makuta.
Or it could represent the obelisk.
Which might represent the Makuta.
Yeah, but think about it. The large obelisk, and then there's six slots around it at its base. A large blackish one stood in the center of many smaller stones, and a cluster of six rocks stood apart of the others.
The cluster of small stones might represent, like, the population of the island. While the six is...
Or the...
The six will probably be, like...
The Oceanic Six, yes. As it's been called. So that's one possible theory. And then the large blackish one, so it could be like a last minute new person who's going to be joining the team, or it could be represent Makuta, or even Takua. There's a lot of things it could...
Yeah.
And the fact that the Matoran takes the time to make this means he's making a clue for Stannis. What that clue is, it might be revealed at a later date, but obviously that's just supposed to show the bag opened on purpose. After all, if it didn't, then he would have put these all away as soon as possible, or attempted to. Instead, the moment it breaks open, he starts arranging them.
Yeah. Then after that, he asks if Stannis wants to be the chosen one leader guy, and then tells him about the other five Matoran.
So first off, he's talking about how there is definitely more to see, basically, in the whole plot line, which was kind of already known, but this is just confirmation. And, yeah, and he asks that whether Stannis is willing to follow this path or not, and brings up the prophecy again, a prophecy he says he does not know by heart. And then Stannis, of course, says, destiny, yada, yada, yada.
Stannis asks the Matoran his name. The Matoran doesn't really tell him.
Oh, yeah, the Mystery Matoran also talks about how he did mention the five others, and then also the Wall of Destiny. So, evidently, there is some other sort of clue. Now, whether he's just talking about a metaphorical Wall of Destiny, mm-hmm. That's up for debate. And then, yeah, he mentions how he still remains the Mystery Matoran. Now, who this Mystery Matoran is, there's a lot of speculation about. He could be Takua, another random Matoran. Maybe he's one of the Toa Mata downgrading into Matoran form for some magic. We don't know.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah. And now he gives out the names of the five others, and mentions that how they're scattered around the island, and he and Stannis has to find them. So again, heroes have to do all the heavy lifting.
He must have assemble a team to fight against the evil Makuta and save the universe. Sounds very heroic.
Yeah, and now here's this really strange thing. He does not know the prophecy. For all his bringing it up, and for all his talking to Stannis about how he's the Wanderer and everything.
Here's the direct quote. Now, Stannis, I would like to have an exchange of trusts. If you would be open to it, I need to know the exact words of the second great prophecy, for they have long since fled my memory. In return, I will answer any questions you may have, to the best of my abilities.
Exactly. So, there we go. He knows all this stuff, but he doesn't know the words of the second great prophecy. Now, either this is Makuta's meddling, if it is, then it could still be Takua, or someone else is meddling. However, if it is Takua and he just got it just on his own, not through any meddling, that raises red flags because Takua is the chronicler. And he mentions they have long since fled my memory, which means he knew it at one point. Or he's saying he did. Now, he could be lying, of course.
Says he could have very well been Makuta in disguise.
Yeah.
Then he says that luckily he is not.
Yeah. And so if it is Takua, though, and he actually forgot them to normal means, that raises a lot of red flags because Takua's the chronicler. He memorizes all this stuff and writes it down.
Or maybe he might have, like, fallen off Kininui again.
Yeah, and lost his memory that way. That is another thing that it could be with him. But it's still quite odd how he knows all this. And then, so Stannis talks about the prophecy again, which, from the looks of it, is exactly how we saw it. Of course, I may actually copy-paste and compare, so if there's a typo or something, or just a change on purpose, we'll find it. But, yeah, that's the prophecy, up to the point where he explains the prophecy.
Let's see. So, then, after that, they say something about talk about the Makuta for a while, and Stannis asks what Kapura's riddle was.
Yeah, and then also when he, I want to bring up when he talks about he could have been Makuta in disguise, and tells him he should have offered up his end of the bargain first and all that. So that means either this was a bit of a test for Stannis to see whether he is, if he's too trusting or something.
Or if he just has faith.
Yeah, so that's also it. And also, when he brings up, I could have very well been Makuta in disguise, there is a good way of saying, I forgot the saying, actually, where to make someone trust you by telling, or what's the thing about lying, or saying the lie as truth, or whatever it is?
No idea. Google it.
Yeah, whatever. There's basically, the one way to get people to think you're lying is to tell the truth. And so, when he brings up, I could have very well been Makuta in disguise, maybe he is, and he's still working on some nefarious purpose, and he's just saying that so Stannis goes and thinks that he's not. So, he also brings up how Makuta, if he wants to kill people, does it. So once, again, the big bad being lazy and stuff, which always is their downfall. But can't they ever just kill everyone at the beginning and be done with it? So, before waiting for them to go all big and powerful. So,
after that, he asks what Kapura's riddle was. The Mathorin says that he doesn't know, or he might be lying, because the clues were entrusted to each of the
If he is Takua, then he's lying or he's amnesia again, because he told him the clues. So,
he might be lying that he doesn't know them because it's actually Takua and wants to troll everyone.
Yeah, that's what I said. That's what I said just now.
Yeah.
So
he could be lying.
Anyway.
Or he could be lying that is lying that is lying. So he's actually lying.
Deception and all that jazz. Yeah. But anyway. So, when he brings that up, once again, red flags, dude, just because he doesn't know the secondary prophecy, he doesn't know the clue, but he knows Stannis' name, he knows all these other Matoran, he knows the gist of the second grade prophecy, he knows that Stannis is the Wanderer, and all that jazz. So, it's relatively odd that he's lacking in certain areas that everyone else know, or not necessarily everyone else, but you know what I mean. Then
Stannis asks what the Matoran knows of Takua.
And then here's the thing I find interesting. He calls him the Other Wanderer, which now either that seems like to me a deliberate tie-in,
Stannis says that it's the Other Wanderer.
The Other Matoran says he's the Chronicler, you are the Wanderer, but I still find it interesting how Stannis, even though there's really been no mention of it before, he calls him the Other Wanderer, so that also could have been something thrown in there as a minor clue. So, and now we have confirmation about Takua. So he definitely did go into Makura's lair, or he's lying again. So, with the Toa, and he says that he emerged alive. So that
he
means
believed.
Yeah.
Relieved.
Believe that's also another major thing, but let's go for a second because we're already trusting him in a lot of things, the Mystery Matorian. For all we know, he could just be lying with us and all that.
And we've
But
mentioned that like hundreds of times.
yeah, so if he actually did emerge again alive, that means he knows what happened to the Toa, or a convenient cave-in blocking off the Toa from him.
And conveniently, I just had an idea.
Didn't Gali make a mental link with Takua?
Yeah.
Before they went down into Kinanui?
Yeah.
So he should theoretically still know unless there was some sort of interference.
Actually, there was. Because remember the game, when they went too deep, he wouldn't be actually able to see, so I had to go down into the temple himself to actually witness the battle.
Okay, well, I didn't finish up all of my browser had issues back.
Blasphemy. Yeah.
My browser would not work on it, okay?
Heresy.
I would try so hard and it would freeze every 10 seconds and start over the whole game, which is reset. It's very annoying. So yeah. And then also, here it says that the Great Spirit told him the second great prophecy as he left with the company. So now we're getting, it says he's believed he emerged alive, but now it's telling him exactly that, oh yes, and the Great Spirit did tell him the second great prophecy while he's running through the jungle. That contradicts, because one hand he's saying that we don't know if he emerged alive, but we think he did.
I would assume that the Great Spirit had conveyed to him the second great prophecy in those moments.
Yeah,
assume.
But now we're getting the thing, I would assume, I didn't see that part, my bad. But yeah, anyway, also, here's the thing I find interesting. The Great Spirit, from what we know of the Bionicle Mythos, he's always just kind of lazy and sleeping and stuff.
Not really.
Well, okay, he got put to sleep. It's a better term. But
he does still
do
stuff like alter the stars to make Makuta think that Nuri and stuff were like the, supposed to be a Tometru when in actual.
That
when
was
actually
in
was
the past.
Back
he
month.
Wasn't. He wasn't sleeping as much as he was during the Mata Nui saga. So, because remember it was revealed that he's actually not sleeping, he's dying, so he wasn't quite as dead yet.
He was still sleeping
like,
that time.
Yeah, but he wasn't sleeping as much. But I still find it interesting how he directly communicates with Takua, which is a kind of very odd sort of thing that happens, because it's not really that often that the Great Spirit is just going to, or any, like, the major god person just go straight into some random
this
person.
This is Bionicle. You can't fight fate.
Yeah, but that may be so, but how
because
often
has...
Because
the Tormatha probably are having incapacitated. Yeah. Mata Nui will probably do anything to go to any lengths to make sure fate, like...
I still find that odd, because if we look at the Bionicle Mythos as a whole, the Great Spirit, until, like, the Barrow Magna arc, which doesn't even matter here, he never acts really that directly. He's always subtle clues here and there. He's never actually gone and told the exact words all of a sudden. They found maybe random places where it was written and stuff. But the fact that he's told him directly the second great prophecy is interesting.
Possibly drastic measures. Because it's like a drastic situation.
Yeah.
It calls for drastic measures.
Also, here's another interesting thing. Where Takua learns bird speech. I don't recall that ever happening in the canon where Nuji taught Takua bird speech or anything like that. And all we know is that Matoro...
He told Hafu to chisel odd markings, which Hafu did not understand down onto a shale tablet.
Yeah, so Nuji and Matoro are the only characters known, like currently that we know on Mata Nui and are alive and all that, that know bird speak.
Vakuma can understand it-ish.
Yeah.
Wait. How do birds write?
Yeah, that's another weird thing.
Well, do they, like, scratch rocks?
I never understood
they aren't
that.
Even sapients, technically. Do they, like, scratch rocks with their feet?
And, like, actually, it's believed the Gucco birds are sapient.
Okay, they are, probably. Okay, it's like this. You scratch, like, a triangle. That's A. Right-angled triangle. B.
Or it could be like hieroglyphics where triangle represents water or something. But we're off topic on there about birds speaking, which in a written form doesn't makes sense, but it is bionicle. Of course, it's believed that they're bird speech because Nuju translated them and all that. But for all we know, it could be a completely different language.
Like,
but what I find really odd about this
Iroid
is,
speak.
Where did Takua learn bird speak?
From the birds.
Like, we never see in any of the canon or anything, or any of the past history we have, Takua actually learning any form of bird speech.
But this isn't canon.
No, but I'm talking about the BZPRPG canon as well and stuff, because all of current only people who can speak it are Nuju and Matoro, and then Vakuma can understand it. Now, if Vakuma taught Takua bird speech, when? We never see that actually occur of any sort. So, that means Takua most likely...
What about in the game Tales of the Tohunga? You know that game? In which he goes to find the rocks and has to, like, toe stones and has to, like, save the Turaga and stuff. Maybe he learned it during that time. And it was not shown in the game.
Exactly, so we don't know. Yeah. So, yeah, that's odd. If Stannis does run into Vakuma or something, because he's the only one that currently knows this stuff, I would ask Vakuma if he taught him bird speech, or ask Nuju or someone, because we honestly have no idea where he learned bird speech from, and that could be very important, or we could just be finding some minor nitpick that was no one realized about.
But anyway,
but that's
time to move on to like more parts.
Yeah, and then he's also saying the company scattered, and Takua is unknown where he is.
Where is... I just remember something. Is Maku still alive?
What? Maku?
Yeah. I'm pretty sure she's still
alive.
She's
been into hiding by a player that's not coming back. So, yeah. We all know who he is.
Not really.
Really?
Some
don't you remember the
know.
Whole...
Some
oh, wait. Some of us are new. Yeah. Basically, it was a player who got banned for 2 months and decided not to come back. So, anyone... No, he's not coming back.
He just made
that.
Something on the wiki.
Yeah, he made something on the wiki, but he says he's definitely not coming back. So, anyway. So, that's about Takua.
Then
and now Stannis again, he just says he doesn't know anything he didn't already know or suspect. Basically, just like, you gave me nothing, Mr. Dude. Give me some interesting stuff.
And then he just asks who Heiwani is.
Which, the information must have traveled really fast from Nui Rama 5, considering this is before Kokoro is blowing up, but whatever.
So basically, he asks Heiwani
who
Heiwani is.
And we get confirmation that somehow Mr. Matoro knows Heiwani is not always like Heiwani is currently. And Makuta just modified him in some strange way.
Like,
and
you know the mutant Matoran guys in
2008? Well, hey, if we go from canon, currently the only Shadow Toa we know are possible are Corrupt Toa of Light. We don't know what happened to Takua. And then this mystery Shadow Toa pops up, Heiwani.
You mean Heiwani is Takua?
It could be. We don't know what his mind could have been utterly messed up.
You know, actually, any Shadow Matoran can become a Shadow Toa, I think.
Yeah, but the Shadow Matoran... Oh, wait, we still have that one other dude. But, I don't know, the most powerful ones happen to be Light, because Light changes to Shadow easiest. And Takua is the only confirmed Toa of Light that existed on Mata Nui.
And,
of course,
possibly first ever Matoran created.
Yeah. And this is BZPRPG canon. We have no idea what could have happened. And it wouldn't surprise me, actually, now. Think about if Heiwani is Takua, completely changed. Because what better way to have someone disappear on you than to have him in plain sight but not have people realize it? So that Heiwani is either Takua. He could also be a merger of the Shadow Toa that faced the other Toa when they first went down into Mangaia.
He could be like Tahu.
He could be Tahu. He could be all six of the Toa. Maybe they got in some massive Kaida, double Kaida version, and then got modified to a Shadow Toa.
The fusion, according to the wiki, the theoretical fusion between six Toa, the Toa Nui, we'll be like we'll probably have the power of a great spirit. This was the revealing.
But that's
giant robot
normal canon. That's normal canon. Yeah. This is BZPRPG canon. It could be different. So yeah, this brings up that whatever Heiwani's past is, it probably has some importance. And then the fact that he says Makuta took him, which literally like took him, that means he either did face heel turn him, or Heiwani went voluntarily because the next one says gave himself. So he could have been deceived somehow. Mm-hmm. And maybe he thought Makuta was the great spirit or something. Could be in depression. He could have done this to protect his allies or something. We don't know.
Yeah, so basically, he then tells Stannis to be where Heiwani, because Heiwani is like the most powerful Toa since the first six.
Mm-hmm.
It's like run away from him.
That brings up another thing. He says he's the most powerful since the first six. That means the first six are more powerful than he is. Which brings up that the Toa Mantis powers are a lot stronger apparently than they were in canon before Nuva. Because in canon, from what I've seen of Heiwani and of them, Heiwani seems to be more powerful. So that means that either these guys are more powerful or Heiwani has some major weakness we don't know about yet.
I think that means that the Toa Mata have greater auto-hitting powers and greater plot armor.
And they're dead. Or not dead, disappeared.
Yes, they must have used up their...
If we think back to, like, Tuck's first post for the staff plot in Kinanui, Makuta talks about how he couldn't destroy the Toa Mata.
The plot armor was too strong.
If Heiwani is the Toa Mata completely modified and warped into one being that's Heiwani, essentially, then he didn't destroy the Toa Mata, but now he's basically using them. So that's another possible explanation of Heiwani's origin. And then, the Matoran talks about how if he knew the answer to the question, then things would be too easy, because great sentient beings, life can never be easy for the prophecy dudes. It's just not allowed.
Yes, so basically,
and now
then he
brings
explains.
Up the great being hopes. So that means that either that's a metaphorical entirely, and it's just like if God wishes it be, or the great spirit, he's actually still very much there, and he's hoping in his slumber, so he knows about this stuff, that things go as planned, and the final destination is the path to the lair of Makuta himself. So, which means to be either going down to Mangai or there's a completely different area now. So,
That's about it.
We still have, like, five paragraphs.
Yeah, basically the last five paragraphs are, like, the Toa were supposed to defeat Makuta, but they failed. Then Stannis says that he and the rest of the Chosen will become the heroes.
Yeah. In the Toa were destined to be heroes part, we all expected them to be. They could have defeated Makuta, and then Destiny plays them a dark trick, and they fell instead. So evidently, they had the strength to defeat Makuta. They were going to defeat Makuta. Something messed with them. So
they lost
whether
their plot
one
armor
of the
and auto-hitting abilities.
Yeah. So possibly Heiwani's creation is what screwed them over. So maybe they were fell into some protodermis, merged as Heiwani-ish, because or even not Toa Nuva for some reason. Or Takua was the one that got corrupted and had to fight them.
Yeah.
And then he's talking about how hopefully Destiny's not going to be so cruel twice.
And then the Matoran tells
there's a Dark Knight. There's a Dark Knight reference.
Yeah.
At least it appears to be the hero Gotham deserves, needs, yada yada yada.
Yeah. Then the Matoran tells Stannis, once he finds the other chosen Matoran, they will follow him to the. He must take them to the Charred Forest where the Matoran will meet them once more.
Here's what I find interesting. The Matoran gave him the option for one more question, and Stannis did not take the question. So either Matorn was hoping he'd ask for a certain question, there was that he had one other answer that was very important, and Stannis neglected on it, or he was just basically a matter of time. But yeah, he talks about how Stannis' job is to go ahead, forge stuff. He's not a wanderer like Takua was, and then he goes all sage-like. And then he just basically tells him the Wanderer is making a new company, like Takua did, and also that it is his job to lead them. So Stannis has been made leader of the Oceanic Six. And also, if judging from the... judging from the other members, that may cause, like, internal conflicts because we have a lot of other leader personas in there.
Ryodrin and Sulov are leaders.
Sulov, yeah.
Sulov are both probably handle being not leader because he's a
subordinate and stuff. Both of them are military men, so they might go along with it. But obviously, there's going to be team tensions regardless. Just that him being officially made leader may cause some disputes between everyone besides Leopardin and Onorax, because they were already following Stannis. And yeah, and then in the last part, the stones Stannis had helped him carry were all blown over by a gust of clear, icy wind. So yeah.
That's about it.
Yeah, so the stones are now disappeared conveniently.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's us dissecting like nerds, but we are nerds. The big giant post and co.
Yeah.
So, anything else?
No.
Well, that about wraps it up, and so essentially, yeah, as always, PM news updates and stuff to Bio and Krazik, because Bio's thing is now working again. Status or random complaints about the website to me, post comments criticism about this in Hubert's blog, and also I still haven't gotten any advertisements, so I'm assuming you guys are just not interested in that for some strange reason, even though constantly the discussion page is being asked, do you people have open for interaction here, or come to this place, so which could all be easily kept away from discussion so we can have more open stuff and a little bit cleaner if we put it in one spot, but evidently everyone likes clogging up discussion pages. So yeah.
That's about it. Bye.
Yep. See you guys. That's all, folks.
Hello there, and today we shall be interviewing Vezok's friend, the possibly one of the few sane people in the BCP RPG.
Relatively sane. Hey there.
Yes. So yeah, we're interviewing you today. And I'll start off with the question that is normally asked every single time. When did you first start RPing, and when did you join the BCP RPG?
I first started RPing back in late 2006, early 2007, something around that in Bionicle Kingdoms. So yeah, been around for a while.
And when did you start the BCP RPG?
Actually, this is the second iteration of the BCP RPG that I'm involved in. I did have one, I did make a character for the old one, but I only played it for two or three posts, so yeah, that didn't go very, very far. And then I joined the one version that Tuck made before this one, and which of course in our great BCP blackout was lost, and so we started from a blank slate again, but yeah, so the BCP RPG, the version previous to this one, that's the one I really started in it.
Okay. And so how do you usually make your characters in the BCP RPG?
Usually, it differs. It differs a lot. Sometimes I think of a really cool trait for a character that I want to that I build a personality around and put in there. And other times it's just that sometimes a character just pops into my mind and I use them if they're cool enough or if I like them enough. And other times I think of things like, well, it would be cool to maybe have a team of Toa, and so I created that team of Toa last. There's no formula that I go by or anything. It's really just usually a spur of the moment thing, I guess. And of course, then I have other characters that have been transported over from the previous version of the BZP RPG, so I just had to refit them a bit to fit into this one.
So how do you make how do you decide on names for them?
Names, usually I go with foreign languages mainly. For example, for Agni, he's a Toa of Fire. I wanted a fire related name, but since we've already got the pretty much a lot of other names that are, I went and looked like what's fire in different languages, and the one that I settled in was from India. I'm not sure if it's Sanskrit or some other form of translation, but I looked for fire in different languages, and this is the one I came up with. Agni is one from India. By the way, there is an official Bionicle character named Agni, but he's totally unrelated to mine.
Agni is a Hindu deity.
God
of fire.
That too, I think. That too, yeah. So it's both. It's a name. Yeah, it's a name for that god. Yeah, I remember now. It's been a while since I looked it up, so yeah, my memory isn't as good as it should be on that part. Sorry, but yeah, it's a name for a god and also a word, a translation for fire. So it's a bit of both. Yeah. And other names like Korra or something. Since she's got like these crow-like feathers growing on their arm, I went and looked at the Latin species names for different crows and altered that around a bit.
And how do you decide on the biographies and pasts and backstories of your characters?
That's also usually the way I went about it usually is I think of a character and their traits and what they are doing now and their personalities. I think I settle on a personality first, because that's the important thing. That's the part of the character that people have to deal with if you're interacting with other characters. So I think of that first. I settle on this like, oh, this one's evil, but maybe not really evil, or maybe just twisted in her values and beliefs or something. And then I reverse engineer the past from that, I think. Yeah, but then I go back and check like what event made this character into who she is right now, and I go back and look like how did their life play out prior to the events that are happening now.
So basically, you make the past fit with their personality and the like and stuff?
Yeah, yeah. Often that, or yeah, or with, yeah, that's the gist of it.
I see. Do you prefer playing good characters or evil characters when?
I want to say that I kind of like to play both equally, but I guess we all kind of like to try and be the heroes from time to time. So I think it leans a bit more to playing heroic characters, maybe, or let's say good characters. They don't always need to be heroic. You can play an anti-hero or something as well. But yeah, I kind of prefer the ones that try to be the ones that save the day. So
that's why you made like a toy team.
No, the reason for the toy team is actually quite different. I made the idea for the reason that usually when I play with the characters, I focus on the topics that the characters are in, and since I'm not Cal or somebody who handles like 30 characters plus, I was thinking like, what's a good way to have a reason to go to the other topics? And a while back I had a lot of characters in Lei Wahi, and if I am often just playing in that topic, what's a good reason to check on the other topics? And so I thought if I'd had a character in each of those topics, it's probably easier for me to keep track of everything that's going on. So that's the out of character motivation for making the Toa team, actually.
So basically, by having like one character per topic, you can learn of what's happening around the entire BCP RPG.
Pretty much, yeah. That's how I try at least to keep track of things. It doesn't work as well as I'd hoped. So I for example, I haven't been in Onuwahi and Hawaii for a few days now, and haven't really checked back there as well. But yeah, for the other topics, it works pretty neat.
Does it get difficult at times due to the fact that some of us are like really active and do about 5 pages per day or something?
It's sometimes, that depends. Like there were some interactions where people just make one line posts. So there's like one line of dialogue from one character, signature next post, one line of dialogue from the character that the other character is interacting with. And so that just dragged on for, I think, 3 pages. It's just like 2 people playing, and they're always, it's just like one line from that guy, one line from that guy, and it just blew out the page count because I have signatures on display. So that's one thing, but it gets difficult when everybody is posting longer stuff, where you really have to at least read a little bit of every post to get the gist of each. So you, in case your character gets mentioned or something happens to your character, because somebody else does something to them, you don't really want to miss out on that and post in reaction later, and then somebody is like, but yeah, I just punched your guy in the face. Like, didn't you notice that? And so to avoid that, you have to really go through each page and at least
more
look
carefully and look around.
Yeah. But that's where the search feature comes in pretty handily. So if I come back and I see like, oh my god, there's like 5 new pages overnight, and I don't feel like reading them all because that, of course, takes its time. I just type in the name of my character or the character I'm interacting with in the search bar, and I just go to the last post that they were in. So I can stay on top of my story. I don't necessarily, that of course means I might miss out on somebody else joining in, but unless they make mention of one of the characters' names. But yeah, that's a good way to stay on top of things as well.
Okay, which of your current BZP RPG characters is your favorite?
Ooh, that's a tough one. Because I put quite a bit of time into creating each of them, and I've played all of them pretty equally over the past month or so. So that really is a tough one. As far as fun and playing goes, I think I really like playing all my characters. I think at the moment playing with the Aitua is a little more fun because they have all this backstory and more story that I haven't revealed yet to them, that kind of affects the way I write the characters, and they're also morally ambiguous to the point where it's where they're basically good guys, but it's no, they're not exactly acting lawful at times. So I think that's pretty much the my good guy team that I like to play right now, and for bad guys it's still Korra that I like playing the most.
Where did you get the idea to like blow up the Great Mine and stuff, the things you did with Kokoro, with Korra?
I was thinking, usually I wanted to make an evil character, but a character that isn't just evil for the sake of being evil. Because those usually tend to... I was thinking for a motivation for her. It's like for her reason to do the things that she does. And when I created the character, I was like, okay, so she's evil, but why is she evil? And so there's a bit more character development coming down the line a bit in the future. So I'm trying not to reveal something that I haven't exactly thought out yet, and but which I plan on doing later. But what she's thinking is that she's kind of got this reverse value thing, where she's believing that the Matora and the Toa are basically occupying what would lawfully be considered a property of Makuta. So that's kind of her. That's the point of view that she's having, and so I was thinking if she serves the Makuta, like what's a good motivation for her personally to do the things she does? And what I realized was that I can't just go around like killing NPCs, because you either kill like the random NPCs, which, as we all know, doesn't really make a difference in this game.
There's like an endless horde of random NPCs everywhere.
Yeah, I'm not sure, but quite a bit. The population of the villages, that number has dropped quite a bit over the last month, I think. There's a lot of NPCs dying left and right, and I'm not a big fan of that. Just going around slaughtering random NPCs just to bring home the fact that the character is evil. Ooh, yeah. So I was thinking I need to do something that is a more high profile, because if you go around killing random NPCs,
everyone
does it really
does
make it? Yeah. First of all, everyone does that, and secondly, nobody really cares. It's like nobody really cares to the point that it doesn't affect the gameplay. It's like, oh my god, there's one villager less. So what? So I wanted something that is a more, that is both more high profile and it has an effect on the other players, so that the other players are like, whoa, it's like, this character is doing stuff that kind of affects the world of the game. So, what I thought is I'd go a bit nostalgic and let myself get inspired a bit by the old Mata Nui Online games. And so I went back there and trying to come up with new ways to bring back a bit of destruction to the villages, to really bring the fact home, because bring the fact home that the Makuta has servants that can do a bit of damage, and so I kind of went after landmarks in the game.
So you blew up the Great Mine and dropped the glacier on Kokoro.
Well, in relative terms, yes. Because all those things are pre-approved and discussed and talked over with Nuju, so I don't get approval for each of those things. So he's quite strict on like how much damage is allowed to do, because these are still the settings of the game. But yeah, if somebody reads like, oh, there's an avalanche coming for the village, and in this case it just like not counting these 3 days, That avalanche just like destroyed 6 huts, but still somebody dropped an avalanche on a part of the village and it killed a few people. So that's really the purpose of Korra, just to show the Matron that they're not really safe in their villages, and also to show the other characters that like the Mercuta has potent agents that can do a lot of damage, and also to if you've noticed that to show the Matron that their values, like this unity, duty, destiny thing, isn't really working out for them, or supposedly not working out for them. That's the kind of the psychological side of things.
Yeah. What would you say was your best moment in all your RPing in the BZP RPG?
This version only?
Sure, this version only. Unless you have a more awesome moment in a different version.
Well, in the last version, when we still had the Zakuro plot and all the priests and magic and Tuck throwing around meteors, I had Korra around then and Agni too, and there wasn't so much a single moment, but that whole plot when Josuke went around killing people. I think he killed another character, or it was an NPC, a well fleshed out NPC with name and backstory and everything. But he killed one of those, and Agni got on his heel, and Korra at the same time was running with Krigata and stuff. And then what happened in the end was that Tuck decided he liked her so much that he wanted to basically have the same position, kind of rise through the ranks of Zakuro. So that was really a great opportunity to get involved so deeply with such a high profile character.
So basically, your best moment was just Korra getting more deeper into a plot and becoming a more important part of the game.
Yeah, in that version. In this version, I'm not entirely sure yet. There's a lot. I can't think of a moment because there's the plots that my characters are involved in. The characters my guys are involved in with are generally really great to read and a lot of fun to read and play with. So it's really hard to decide on what's really like the most outstanding thing. I think we just got out of the we've just had the climax of the Valria plot happened not too long ago, just a day or two ago, and so that was a really great moment for Agni, and I think that's the most recent big thing. And of course, every time you approved like another attack from Korra on the villages, that's always fun to plan and write about.
On the other end of the spectrum, what would you call your worst failure in the VZP RPG?
My worst failure? I didn't have any. I'm perfect. No, that's hard to think about. It's like there's always a couple of mistakes, like missing a post or something. Worst failure. I can't say that there's really been a moment yet where I'd say that like characters really have failed. I don't think there has been an instance of that yet.
So you haven't failed that much yet in the game?
Yeah, but probably a few minor things like missing a post here and there, or yeah, but nothing where I really messed up or anything. I think it's like if I'm blocking out something here that I can't remember right now, and there's this huge elephant sitting in the room somewhere, just point me toward it. I can't think of one right now.
Okay. Which players have you enjoyed RPing with the most during the BZP RPG?
Well, of course the guys that my characters are currently with, like with Cal and Zuriska and the Mask and Map and some of the others. That's always a lot of fun. We have like this where all the drama is taking place, and that's usually a lot of fun. And it's like there's a lot of great people. I don't think I've run into anybody yet that I haven't enjoyed RPing with. So it's like you have a few rough spots when maybe somebody goes inactive for a longer period of time and your character gets stuck in it for a while. But other than that, so you're all great. So.
Okay. How do you get involved with that love thingy, drama thingy, Majiki of Doom?
Oh, you mean the Kumo Islet thing?
Yeah.
Well, actually, there wasn't a point where I just went like, "Oh, I have to get involved in this." It was basically Valeria, the masked character. She was when she escaped from that. Tellarit guy, she was pretty beaten up and shell-shocked and wandering aimlessly through Takoro, and Matoa Agni, as a officer in the Takoro guard, he was on patrol and he found her, and so he got her to talk, and he realized, hey, there's this evil guy running around on the Kumu Islands, and he's doing this to other Toa, and he's running around, and he's basically doing this stuff unchecked, so I'm gonna put an end to that. So they had, he got his quest, and he kind of went out, did it, and so people, Valeria and Agni get to know each other. They pick up Meph. Meph likes Valeria. Valeria likes Meph. They get together, and that's basically how that thing just. Like the characters get more involved with each other, and eventually, like these relationships start to form. So that's where the drama comes from. It's quite, pretty much a natural progression. So there was no point where I'm like, oh yeah, I have to get in on this. Which also makes it fun if it just like plays out by itself. So you don't have to force anything. It pretty much came naturally to us.
What RPing tips do you have for other players in the VZP RPG?
There are actually two things that I've noticed a little over the past 2 months, I guess. And the first thing is because it's so current, is really the treatment of the non-playable characters, the NPCs. Because I think they often get just they get treated like cannon fodder, and that's something that I don't enjoy as much as other people. So we've seen it recently in Kokoro, but you pretty much see it all throughout the game, where the NPCs are basically just I don't want to say Deus Ex Machina, because that's too big a word for that type of situation, but they're kind of a plot convenience for many characters. Like, oh, you need to buy a certain item. Like, hey, look, there's a merchant NPC Matoran, and he's selling this stuff, exactly what we need, so let's go buy it from him. And then you've got these other, then you've got instances of evil characters who want to show off that they're evil, and so they're like, oh, I'm just gonna murder this Mutoran in the middle of the village square, and he's dead now, and look at me, I'm so evil. So that's kind of what bothers me a little, that people just use the NPCs as just to either like get stuff or just to use them as cheap cannon fodder for their characters to show that their characters are cool and capable. That's one thing. So I would suggest to really treat the NPCs more like real characters, and And one thing is to actually give them a personality. Like, usually if you walk up to a merchant, that's a bad example. Let's put that. Not going there, but yeah, that's pretty much the gist of it. Like, treat the NPCs really like they are real characters, except that nobody is really playing them.
So instead of using them merely as random, what you call them, props, instead of using them as props, and use them more as just real characters instead of props?
Yeah, pretty much. Just like these, because they're not just there, one way of playing these things is to actually make a merchant NPC or something, and then give them a name, and then even think of a personality. First of all, it's fun because you can try out like a different personality in between your regular characters, and secondly, you come up with a character that's way more credible than just the random guy you just walk up to, because that's another thing where people are just like, they need some healing potion, and in the post, it's like a really simple example, but maybe like a character needs healing herbs or something, I'm gonna get this. Oh, there's a material merchant. I'm gonna walk up to them. I'm gonna buy. My character walks up to them and he buys this from them, and so now I have healing herbs and my injuries heal faster, and my injuries are like healed the next post because hey, I got herbs, so it's healing, right? And maybe what I like to do is to give the merchant a personality. Like maybe that merchant isn't the most friendly guy, or maybe he's not the most forthcoming or gentle Matoran on the island. So what I like to do is I like to write the I have one NPC guy that hangs around in Onukoro mostly, and there's more to him, but for now he's just a merchant NPC Matoran. But like if you walk up to that guy, he may be like, hey, I'm not selling this to you for that price. Like, I want to see some more widgets. So like, give these NPCs a few personality quirks.
So, like, for an example, don't treat them like those random vendors in the video games, treat them more like, sort of more fleshed out NPCs. Like, instead of one of those vendors in Pokemon who just like, hi, welcome to our shop, what do you want to buy? And have like a set price and stuff.
Pretty much. But more important than the vendors, I think, are the city guards, the taco, the guards of the villages, because those really sometimes tend to get ignored. That's my impression sometimes.
They've been treated as cannon fodder, basically.
Well, yeah. Yeah, but also not also that. But I think they get it ignored a lot. Like, there's a lot of characters going around doing like evil stuff, murdering inside of the villages, not just like not outside of Takoro in the Charred Forest where nobody's around to see it, but actually like inside, like in one of the many bars or something, and I don't know, they break a guy's neck, he drops dead, and they just walk off. And I'm like, well, like, Takoro has the Taco Guard, and they're one of the best, like, military Matoran forces on the island, and they are protecting the city, but they are not called when somebody drops dead in a bar because some other guy broke his neck. I mean, I kind of know where that's coming from. You don't think about it at that moment, or you don't want to think about it, or you just want to show that your character is so, that he's so bad he can just do it and walk off. So the guards are not only used as cannon fodder, but they are often ignored as a serious military force. So I don't know. We've seen it in Kokoro just now. It's like people blowing up stuff, and where's the Sanctum Guard? And they're like, I don't know. And maybe they are all just busy helping the injured. Yeah, so... it's unrealistic.
I've also failed to see captains get arrested as well by the guards.
Yeah, or thieves or something like that. Yeah. So. If you steal something, why doesn't somebody like call you out on it? Or I think is having like the transition between the villages. I kind of think if you're playing an evil character and you're actually interacting a lot with other people, like word is going to get around. So if they know your face, I don't know. I'm not sure, but if Korra went back to Onuwahi or Onukoro, I'm not sure I would just have her walk in through the front door. So I try to make sure that her involvement in the bombing of the Great Mine is not as well known as it should be, but there are a few people who know her face or who know her voice, and I wouldn't want to risk to just go in there and get arrested by the Ursuri. Yeah. So treat the NPCs a bit more seriously. It's basically there.
What are your opinions on the current events in the RPG?
Like I said, I can't really speak for Anuwai or Hawaii, but everything, or Tawai for that point, because I just said Korra relocate there, so I'm not up to speed on that. I have to say, Kauai, a little bit silly, to be honest, because it's nice having a lot of action, but... And maybe I'm missing it, but I'm not entirely sure I see the point of causing all that damage. I'm not really sure. I'm not quite clear. It's not quite clear to me what the reason was behind the attack that they did. Do you know that? Why that? What they tried to achieve there?
I think they just tried to like cause chaos and blow up part of Kokoro and stuff. And stuff went wild, and stuff happened.
Yeah, stuff happened.
Yeah,
stuff happened. That's basically what I remember about this old fight. And it's a bit confusing because
much is happening at once.
Yeah, lots of things happening at once, and lots of fights happening, but also. This one character Yolof, I think, mm-hmm. the name. He was the one who just went around blowing up huts with Madu fruit, and one of my characters and Krazik's Ravage. Was like we ran into that guy, and they acted as if they just met. I mean, they just met, so I went along with it, but. It's kind of interesting, interesting and confusing at the same time to see like these characters who are basically responsible for all the damage that is happening in that has been done to the village, just walking around the same village with basically unopposed by the guards and interacting with the people who are actively opposing them, and it's like I don't know. I'm not sure that it is a good thing that the people who did the evil deeds are interacting with the people who are opposing them, and nobody's acting as if it matters. Yeah, so Kokoro is a little confusing right now. Leiwahi, yeah, we had this one rough spot back there with the maiming of a guy who got executed, so that was a bit dark. And a bit pointless as well.
Yeah.
But aside from that, the stuff that's happening in Palakoro, like, except for that one thing, it's pretty tame, and it's pretty good too. So, like, there's not a lot of fighting going on, and it doesn't need to be. I mean, there doesn't always have to be fighting for things to be fun. I quite enjoy like seeing all these characters interact and it's like exchange banter or like go on each other's nerves. It's that's always a fun read. of course, with the with Nuju gone at the moment, the main plot is a bit stagnant, so I can see why there's not a lot of action going on in the village, but it's still fun to see the characters interact.
Yeah,
and now, of course, there's Gawahi, and I have to admit, I'm not keeping as much track, I think, as I probably should be of all the wedding business that's going on, because that just dragged out for so long. I think it's like, correct me if I'm wrong, but I was under the impression that like these preparations for that lasted a month in time.
Yeah, it sort of did.
Yeah, so that dragged out really long, and so there was always stuff happening in Gakko, but every time I went there, it's just same as Leiko, but with less plot-relevant substance, I think. And I'm not trying to lessen the fun of anybody here, it's just my personal taste. I'm sure it's fun, but it's I'm not involved in all this wedding business or with any of the characters involved with wedding, so it's not, and so it's not the not the part of the game that I'm trying to keep track of as much. There's some other stuff going around, but I think Gawai at the moment mainly the main thing is this wedding that's going on. So yeah, I've got a few characters there. There's minor activity. I'm more excited to see what's going to happen once Agni and the others are getting back to the village and bringing like the people they rescued, getting them treatment for whatever injuries they have, and Agni has to go back to Takoro, and that's actually going to be a really interesting part, and I've thought about it for quite a while now, and yeah, it's like Agni has been gone so long now, and there has been so much stuff going on. He has to go home, face Jala, and face the music.
Yeah, so basically, he has to go home and get chewed out for being somewhere instead of guarding the village.
Yeah, it's like he was out there doing good stuff, but hey, that's like. Like somebody poisoned the well, somebody blew up the great mine, somebody dropped an avalanche on Kokoro. Like, where the Karzani have you been?
Yeah, so well, that's about it for this interview, and yeah, it's been a pleasure interviewing you for this episode.
Yeah, it's shorter than the last attempt, but yeah, it's been fun. Thanks for having me.
Sure, bye.
Bye.